Hi, this is Jerry Williams, retired FBI agent. I'm the author of FBI Crime Fiction. You might want to read my book, Pay to Play. It is inspired by a true case. The story is about a female FBI agent investigating corruption in the Philadelphia strip club industry. I'm also a podcaster. My podcast, FBI Retired, Case File Review, interviews retired agents about their cases and careers. And you're listening to Gangland Wire.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced four documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. We are here in the classic old Ice House building in Midtown, Kansas City. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
You know, my son was getting on me. He said, well, you always start out the same way. You're in the classic old Ice House building in Midtown, Kansas City. He was mimicking me. Do you think mm-hmm. that's right, Aaron?
Well, it is a classic old American Ice House building, and we are in Midtown. You're really only here because that happens to be where the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4 is located, where we record Gangland Wire.
That's true. Live every Monday night, and then he has...
My own broadcast that I do Monday 7 to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time. Gary makes mention of it and puts it on the website as well, so thank you for doing that. But we don't necessarily talk crime there. We talk independent, unsigned artists and trending topics, so kind of something different. But Gary had been on as a guest many, many years ago when his documentary first came out, and I guess we inspired him a little bit.
Yeah.
Said, if this guy can do it, anybody can do it, including me.
Yeah.
And then he came to me and said, you know, well, I don't want to sound like a old cop drinking beers, telling stories. Can you join me?
Yeah, I needed the voice of reason to come in here and ask me questions when I start using technical jargon like he made the block. Yeah. Aaron said, well, what do you mean making the block? Well, everybody knows what that means. It means you drove around the block several times. Anyhow, moving right along, we are in the second episode of a series on Las Vegas. Media figures and the mob. Last week, we talked to my friend Larry Henry, and we're going to talk to him again. He told about his career and all what was going on out there in Las Vegas. And since there was one of the more famous mob reporters of the day, a man named Ned Day, lived out there and worked out there, and Larry knew him and is intimately familiar with his career. So we're going to talk with Larry about the muckraker, if you will, mob reporter Ned Day. Say hello, Larry. How you doing tonight?
Doing great, Gary. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Really, this has been a fun show, this last one, and this next one, I expect it to be even more fun. And, you know, we met in Bentonville, I guess, where you are now, and not too long ago. You know, you remember me talking about that kind of true crime book that's not mob-related I was talking about the two brothers that were robbing banks, and they'd set bombs off in the local police stations and then go rob the bank?
I do, and I didn't want to say anything about it because I didn't want to tip anybody off to your scoop, but I will say this, what's going on with it? I can't wait to see it.
Well, you know, I'm stalled out. I'm waiting for a Freedom of Information Act request right now for the entire file from, I got the first brother's entire file, but the second brother's, I wanted his entire file. After I got into it, I thought, you know, there's something here. I think I can make something out of this, hopefully a true crime book. And then, of course, a screenplay, and we'll get Brad Pitt to play one of them and Robert De Niro to play the intrepid FBI agent that arrested him.
Well, they gotta get a couple good looking guys to play you and Aaron. Say,
how did I end up in this?
How we report on it?
Got to get a couple good looking guys. I will say this, and Gary, I'm not gonna blow it. So I don't want you to cut go dead air here on me. But Gary and I were we're grabbing a bite at Carrabba's in Bentonville, and Gary told me a story that I'm not going to get into all these people involved, but man, you got some big shots involved and you got the crazy. Yeah. I'll just leave it at that, Gary, before you cut me off.
It is a heck of a story. Well, I'm still working on it.
Well, people, they'd have to have listened to some older episodes and binged on the Gangland Wire to realize that Gary rode his motorcycle all the way down there, met up with you, and then spoke to, you have a class of young attorneys.
A law club. And I was good. Gary was great. Gary blew him away. My favorite story was where Gary, when I eyeballed with the notorious Kansas City underboss, Tuffy DeLuna, on one dark street one night, where Gary and Tuffy kind of eyeballed each other. They're still talking about that story, Aaron and Gary.
Well, when they do the movie, can I play Ned Day? Because he, it turned out, was married to Miss International, Miss Nude International. Sounds like a good role.
Nude International. you're too good looking to play that role. You need to be a little more scruffy looking.
Well, you know, no one wants to see me kiss the leading lady, especially Gary or his wife.
Especially Gary. Okay. He was scruffy. You're too good. He was too scruffy looking, Aaron. They got to get somebody more scruffy looking than you.
You know, I first thing I want to do, I'm going to play, when I was doing my movie, I interviewed a guy who actually worked for the Valley Times for Bob Brown for a little bit when he was young. He's now a University of Nevada at Las Vegas professor, and he's a Las Vegas mob historian and historian in general, Mike Green. I've seen him on other documentaries. I saw him on a 30 for 30 documentary here not too long ago, and my son told me he saw him on another documentary. Mike Green, when I brought up that story about Bob Brown and the skimming with the and the whole Lefty Rosenthal deal, Mike said, he said, I worked with him, and he said, I don't believe he was really corrupt, but he was in a fix trying to generate enough income to keep this newspaper alive. And you know, his reporters were going after mob guys left and right. It was no holds barred on that. But so he said, you know, he just got himself in a fix. And nobody's for sure if Bob Brown went to Bob List or if Lefty Rosenthal just told everybody that Bob Brown went to List. That never became clear in the investigation.
Yeah, and I don't know that. We talked about that last segment. I mean, that's what's out there. I don't know whether that's true or not, but there's no question. And you know what Mike Green says is always gold. He knows. I mean, he's the established historian that is the word. But you know, Ned Day, we talked last segment, Gary, about how scrappy that paper was, and you know, did the publisher get himself in some ethical quandaries to try to keep it alive? And you know, sounds like it might have happened that way, but who knows? But at the end of the day, as Linda Fest, one of the editors, said there, you know, they were still breaking big mob busting stories, and so before they collapsed, Ned Day was he had cut his teeth. You know, we'll talk about this. He had come from Milwaukee. He was a rough and tumble, kind of a mixed up criminal guy himself in a way. He had his dad was this famous bowler named also Ned Day. I think it was even on the cover of Time at one point, but then had a deep, dark sort of plunge to the race to the bottom. He'd come into some hard times. Had a FBI ended up investigating him in the 60s, his dad. And the guy died young. He was running some kind of a race wire or down in his basement of one of his bowling pro shops. But anyway, so Ned was sort of in that world and got mixed up with the Mad Bomber, Frank Ballastreri, and worked in some of his strip clubs, worked in his bars. He was a self-described day himself. said that he was a pimp and a gambler. So all that was going on in Milwaukee, and as Aaron was joking earlier, had some colorful episodes. He was once married to Miss Nude International. He was living with a woman at one point who had, you know, what was basically a prostitute and was strangled to death. She and her 10-year-old daughter strangled to death. The daughter's body was found on top of the mom, both of them strangled by some John, basically, some guy north of Milwaukee. So, you know, the guy had a rough, he was kind of a rough cut guy himself, Ned Day was, and then wandered into a, got connected at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee with a journalism professor who turned him on to journalism. That sort of turned his life around, Gary.
That's interesting. I'm going to play a little clip what Mike Green has to say about Ned Day.
In the late 70s, guys like Savella, Gaston Company, who are worried about the reporting, brings me back to Ned Day. Ned had a lot of these transcripts. He had sources. And no one had treated the industry like that before him in Las Vegas. Now, Hank Greenspun had gone after guys like Mo Dalitz, no question. But the kind of day-to-day reporting that Ned in particular was doing at that time, and some others, it's not to say Ned was the only guy, but he's really the key figure in all of this. And I think it's funny that they are concerned about Las Vegas now. There had been this traditional view, and I can see it in some cases, in others I disagree with it. If you were a reporter in Las Vegas in the 50s, 60s, 70s, at a newspaper, TV didn't have big staffs then. If you weren't looking to get out of Las Vegas to a better job, you were looking for a PR job.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Mike Green is, like you said, he is the expert. He is a real historian and has studied this stuff out. I was really happy to have him in my film. I wish I could have used him a little more. I had so many people, FBI agents, and I actually had the casino employee, the lady that worked for Frank Rosenthal on the movie, so you can only get so many people in, but Mike was good and articulate, and he worked directly with Ned Day and Bob Brown at that little newspaper. But let's move on. Larry, this Ned Day, he comes out to Las Vegas after this kind of checkered history in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and he goes to work for this small Valley Times newspaper. You want to take it on up from there?
Yeah, Gary, he was, we talked about, checkered would be a definite description, mixed in with some of the mob guys, the notorious mob guys up in Milwaukee who were connected to the Kansas City guys. And so he knew a guy, they knew a guy, after this one girlfriend was strangled, the 10-year-old daughter who was also strangled was his goddaughter, was Ned Day's goddaughter. So after that, not long after that, he wrote about them. He was working for a small newspaper up in Milwaukee, was turning his life around, got into journalism, and decided to head out. He knew a guy who was a backgammon guy up in Milwaukee who had gone to Las Vegas and was sort of, I think the name of the place was Dirty Sally's, this bar in Las Vegas. Kind of had a backgammon game going in this bar and got Day down to Las Vegas. He was 31 years old, which seems late, you know, for a journalist starting out on a sort of a muckraking career, but that was the turn that Ned Day had taken in his life. And so he comes down to Las Vegas, gets involved with the Valley Times, and immediately makes a splash. This scrappy little newspaper, no holes barred, immediately comes down, works sources in bars and strip clubs and UNLV basketball games, and, you know, gets to know folks on both sides of the law and broke story after story after story. Linda Fess, one of the editors who's now an ad executive in Las Vegas, had a great source among the gaming regulators, fed Day some of that stuff that he vetted with his own sources. And so on and on and on, the legend then begins to build because, you know, Aaron was mentioning last time about, you know, vetting sources and how you check all that stuff out. Day just broke stories and started gaining a reputation then he moved up in the world. He went to the big morning newspaper, which is the Review Journal, then went on to become managing editor, I think was his title. But basically, he was just a shoe leather reporter for the CBS affiliate in Las Vegas and really soared, really took off. He was he was kind of a tie loose at the neck type guy, literally trench coat wearing TV reporter, had sort of that Midwestern Milwaukee. He wasn't one of these smooth sort of, radio voice guys with, he was just kind of a gruff, almost a stereotype shoe leather reporter.
This is the Las Vegas Strip today, Broadway West, the great neon way. Money, power, sex, that's what it's all about on this street of streets in Las Vegas. But mostly it's about money. Billions of dollars in hard cash change hands here every year. That's what's always been the lure for the tourists and for the captains of organized crime in America. But in the past year, important changes have taken place on this street. A crime empire that ruled here for almost half a century has been decimated by murders and convictions in court.
Really went after the mob aggressively. He would go to the bars where they hung out so he could sort of challenge them, really, and let them know, so you're not, you don't own this town. He calls Tony Spilotro, the Chicago outfit street enforcer, street rackets guy in Las Vegas, a fireplug that walks like a man, challenged Spilotro, basically. And so rough and tumble guy and a hard-hitting reporter. I was out there at that time, started out as a reporter, and admired those guys. I mean, they were tough, tough reporters. For a young reporter like me to see these guys be pit bulls like that really made an impact on my own career. But so Day was an aggressive mob-busting reporter and broke story after story at the time in Las Vegas history when it was its hottest. You had Lefty Rosenthal running the Stardust for the Chicago outfit. You had Carl Thomas with Gary, a lot of the stuff you write about in Leaving Vegas and have on your website and documentary, Gangland Wire. But it's, you had Carl Thomas out there for Savella at the Trop. So you had, then right in the middle of this was Ned Day breaking story after story.
And I remember seeing in that Mob on the Run, it was like I noticed he got a guy named Dick Law, who was a kind of an interesting story there. There was a guy named Dennis Gomes, who you may have heard of, and Dick Law, they were auditors with the Gaming Commission, and the Gaming Commission was not the most aggressive, say, in the they were in a state of flux. They were in a state of change, becoming more aggressive. But these two guys were aggressive, and they were not they weren't so close to the upper echelon, to the politically appointed representatives that ran the board, that anybody was paying much attention to him. And I noticed he got Dick Law on camera to talk about how they made this unannounced trip into the Stardust and caught him dirty with the scales rigged so the coins would get weighed wrong and actually ended up causing the death of the casino manager, I believe that Vanderwalker dude. So you remember that?
Yeah.
That seemed like Ned Day, I don't know if he broke that, but he certainly, he must have, Dick Law and Dennis Gomes were a couple of his sources, I'll bet.
Well, Linda Fess, the woman I was just talking about, who's still an ad executive, that's the beauty of all of this, Gary and Aaron. I mean, a lot of these reporters are still around. George Knapp, one of Ned's best friends, who's still an investigative reporter at Channel 8 out in Las Vegas and still does Coast to Coast AM and have Mafia people on. A lot of those folks are still around, but Linda Fess, who was Ned Day's editor at the Valley Times, tells the story about Gomes. He was a source. You know, you're always going to get people in organizations where there's either the hint of corruption or real corruption in any kind of organization. You'll have some good guys who will step forward, and gals, obviously, that's just a term, but you'll have people who will step forward and get the word out. And Day, as Linda Fess tells it, Day definitely... And she both broke stories based on those sources inside the gaming regulatory apparatus in Nevada. So, yeah, the word was getting out from those guys.
Well, part of this had to be having Ned Day come from Milwaukee, having a connection to Ballesteri. You would think if he, through his father, because there was probably gambling and bowling as well, but kind of where the people in Vegas weren't necessarily aware of people like Tony Spilotro as you know, as the figure that he was, having sent out, being sent out from Chicago, where Ned Day maybe had a better sense of the players and the ground. So when he walks in, he knows who to go up and talk to, where other reporters are more like, you know, Gary, where he's like, well, I'm just going into the establishment, having a beer, kind of eyeballing to see who's in charge, you know, to narrow it down.
You nailed it, Aaron. That's exactly one of the things that gave Day an advantage. I mean, he knew some of those guys in the underworld. There's no question about it. And, you know, and you guys know this, a lot of the work Gary did in law enforcement in Kansas City, I mean, a lot of those guys will try to kneecap one another. They'll snitch one another off to get bad adverse publicity for one of their rivals in the underworld. So, you know, I'm sure Day capitalized on a lot of that. I don't know who a lot of his sources were. Like anybody in the news business, you know, you're competing against people, and journalists will, good journalists will obviously keep their sources confidential, but you have to figure he had people, the best reporters, Aaron, you're absolutely right, have great sources on both sides. They have great sources on the prosecutorial side, the law enforcement side, but also on the underworld side. And Day, with this guy that sort of brought him to Las Vegas and was connected in that underworld and Milwaukee, as Day himself was, opened some doors for him in that world in Las Vegas. But man, he was a pit bull. Almost, you know, I think you mentioned it a second ago. His car one day, he had some golf clubs in the back of an uninsured car that he had at his apartment complex. Now, this was an overnight deal. He wasn't in the car, but it got somebody, as Day is relentlessly going after Tony Spilotro, who is just notoriously vicious. One night, somebody puts a flammable liquid on the ground and lights Day's car. To this day, so it you know, burned up. To this day, no one's been arrested or convicted. But I'll tell you a funny little anecdote about that. I remember that. I was in Nevada at the time, and so for a while, you'd see these bumper stickers around town. Everybody knew who did it unofficially. I mean, it wasn't ever officially resolved, but you'd see bumper stickers around town that said, not Ned Day's car. Everybody knew that. I'd give anything, by the way. I've looked around, Gary and Aaron, if you guys find one, I'll pay good money for it. I've looked around eBay and elsewhere. I want to get one of those. But it's one of those kind of things where when you're in the middle of it, you don't realize how valuable something will become one day.
It's a collector's item.
I remember those bumpers. I'd give anything to have one of those things.
You know, if we'd known that, we could have asked, you know, Frank Culotta.
Right.
If he happened to pick up a can of gas or not Ned Day's bumper sticker.
That would be a good question to ask our friend Frank Culotta. That is... I got his phone number. Yeah. I may have to give him a call to ask him if he's the one that...
Hey, Gary, I'll pay for one of those bumpers. But you know, I was talking off the record to a good friend of mine who's now a casino executive in Las Vegas and was in the journalism business out there, who told me, you know, I was asking him confidentially. I don't want to say where he works or anything that might reveal who he is. But he said, you know, it was Spilotro. Or his associates who did that. It was one of those deals that everybody knew who it was, and that's thus the not Ned Day's car bumper sticker. So, yeah, see if Colada's got one, Gary. I'll send you a check and I'll buy it from you.
I also want him to admit that he's the one that firebombed the car too, or he knows that Larry Lurch or Larry Newman or Joe Blasco or one of those other. Members of the hole in the wall gang did it, because you know one of them did or two of them did it and laughed their ass off.
It had to be one of those guys.
Yeah,
it had to be one of those guys, well, right?
There's probably a statute of limitations on that too, so it wouldn't be like he would be,
right,
you know, thrown back in jail for, you know, lighting a can of gas on fire
for a 30-year-old arson. I doubt it.
30-year-old arson. Well, as you guys know, the two great unresolved Las Vegas mysteries. Mob-related mysteries, still unresolved to this day.
Okay, what are they?
Who burned, who blew up, not blew up, but who torched Ned Day's car.
Yeah.
And they got to be the same guys, a lot of people think. Although I know, we'll talk about the other one. I know you got some theories too, Gary. But and then who blew up Lefty's car outside of Lefty Rosenthal's car outside of Tony Roma's rib place there on Sahara in Las Vegas, as he's coming out with some to-go order of ribs for his kids. Lefty's car. So who torched Ned Day's car, and I think it was 86, and then 4 years before that, in 82, who blew up Lefty's car. Those are the two great unresolved mob-connected mysteries in Las Vegas, and my bet is maybe there was some sort of connection on both of those. I don't know.
Well, maybe we should have a bumper sticker, not Lefty Rosenthal's car, too. You know, Bill Owsley will tell a story. I've seen him do this in front of giving a talk about his book. You know, he's got a book, Mobsters in Our Midst, about his career and about a lot of these things and from the FBI viewpoint. And he'll open up to the audience. He'll, you know, they'll talk a little bit. He'll do a read from the book, and then he'll start talking. He'll say, you know, he said, I'm retired from the FBI now. He said, my wife was really glad I retired. And then he'll just pause. So everybody's going, well, you know, so why? And then he'll say, well, she got tired of going out and starting my car every morning.
Oh, well, you know, I think one day Harry Reid's wife went out and saw a rigging. It never blew up, but you know, back in those days, and you know, I mean, Gary, you and I have talked about it. I popped up a blog post about you and Collada theorizing that maybe the Lefty Rosenthal car was a Kansas City hit. That was the era of cars blowing up right and left. And, you know, it's fast forward today, though, then you got about a year after that. So everybody's speculating who blew up Ned Day's car. He's banging on the mob all the time. And you had to have seen that Las Vegas media environment back then. It was just constantly banging on these mob guys. Oscar Goodman, the mob attorney who became mayor of Las Vegas, the gin swilling mayor, said that Ned Day made him rich, made him famous, because Ned Day just banging on those mob guys like Spilotro. But a year after the car torching incident, Ned Day takes a vacation out to Hawaii, and 42 years old, dies according to the coroner's report of a heart attack. Although the conspiracy theorists have never given up that it was not a heart attack.
So it really wasn't that long after all of this reporting, after his car had been firebombed, and you know that obviously sent a message, and then he goes out on a vacation to Hawaii and drowns because he has a heart attack. Is that right?
At 42 years
old. 42.
42 years
no
old.
No history.
Which is.
I would understand it more if he was in the bedroom with his wife, who was the
Miss Nude International.
Miss Nude International.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it.
That would seem less suspicious.
That movie, man. You know you want to star in that movie.
I don't think Ned's necessarily the star if he dies too early.
Gary's killing Aaron. He wants to be in that movie, man. He does. But to this day, and I was talking to someone, I popped up a little column the other day, because it's been 30 years that this happened today. So I popped up a little column the other day, and I was talking to some friends of mine, some sources out in Las Vegas. But to this day, some of his best friends, there is a faction that insists everything from a blow dart with a little poison underwater. It's almost like the theories on the pills to kill Castro, all the crazy way. But there are some theories that by some very credible people that I have enormous respect for, former journalists and friends of mine out in Las Vegas, who say, man, it wasn't a heart attack. Now, he had done, to Aaron's point about a history, he had done a piece on the air. He was the stereotypical beer in a shot glass reporter. I mean, he pounded the booze. He, you know, did the Big Macs, and you know, he, by his own admission, had done a story about having to get into shape and getting away from the stereotypical reporter diet of cigarettes, burgers, French fries, and booze. I mean, he was trying to get away from that. So, you know, by his own admission, he had a lifestyle that could lead to some cardiac issues down the road, I guess. But there still is a lot of suspicion as we speak, guys, about you know, did he really have a heart attack while snorkeling? He was out there snorkeling off the off of a beach near Honolulu. So, you know, endless. In fact, I think the girlfriend at that time, I think now is in the Kansas City area. I mean, she, you know, a lot of these players are still around. I mean, I'm, so a lot of these theories are still popping, guys. It's not a closed case.
And I'm a method actor.
Aaron's a method actor. He's going to have to start drinking and smoking.
Yeah, well, I got one of those down.
Hey, Gary, you got to get Aaron under control, man.
I'm kidding here.
Those burgers and cigarettes.
I'm just curious, what are the odds that, you know, people have a bumper sticker that says, not Ned Day's car. Do you think Ned Day had a bumper sticker on the back of his car that said, meet me at the pepper mill?
Or I thought you were going to say, not Lefty Rosenthal's car.
Yeah.
But,
no, I just figured because
a lot of
meetings seem to have gone down at the pepper mill.
lots gone down at the pepper mill. Now, there's a pepper mill in Reno where I first met Bob Miller. Then there's still to this day that legendary old, there's not much old school Las Vegas left. Gary gets into these old school places in his fantastic book, Leaving Vegas. But you get away from the Flamingo and the Trop, the Dunes. I mean, everything else is gone. The Dunes, the Stardust, the Sahara. So that pepper mill, which was near where the Riviera is one of those old school bars and restaurants that's still around in Las Vegas. So there still are some of them. But, you know, the thing about Day got there at the age of 31 in Las Vegas, checkered, as Gary said at the top, a checkered history with some bad dudes up in Milwaukee, drew full-on mob guys. 11 years later, he was only in Las Vegas 11 years. He wasn't there. That's not very long to carve out a reputation, which is basically still going on. He ripped it up for 11 years and then at 42 was gone. So, and it's been 30 years, guys, since Day died, and he is still talked about in revered tones in Las Vegas.
I know. It must have been maybe 2-3 nights ago. I found Mob on the Run and sat there on the same tablet that we're talking with you by Skype on and watched that. And I had to, because it was 13 or 14 episodes, and just that original news footage that was in that, and some of the in the face of Tony Spilotro, you know, video camera footage and watching Ned Day, you know, trying to ask these questions that really get people killed.
Oh, he was a pit bull. He was a pit bull, Aaron. It's funny because, yeah, I'm with you. That footage in that Mob on the Run piece, I watch it. You know, I go back to it a lot. That footage, you know, you'll see folks in there that aren't necessarily even named in some of those, you know, those famous perp walk videos, mm-hmm. and the bad guys coming out with their lawyers from the court. You know, you'll see like a Herbie Blitzstein over Spilotro's shoulder, who sort of took over the street rackets in Las Vegas when Spilotro was killed in the mid to late 80s. Then Blitzstein wasn't rubbed out until, I think, 96. So, you know, you still had a lot of that mob activity going on in Las Vegas even after Spilotro was killed. But yeah, Aaron, those Mob on the Run clips that Ned had in those, it's just fantastic. And you'll see Oscar Goodman, who later became mayor. I still love that opening shot. If nothing else, it just really sets the tone for the kind of person Ned Day was. It's a little cliche, but it really works. I'm not sure it worked nowadays. You had Ned Day literally in a trench coat. A lot of news directors and television stations would say, lose the trench coat, but I think it worked. Standing on that famous street corner where you could see the Barbary Coast behind him, which now is the Cromwell. You could see the Flamingo, the one that began it all on the Strip. Not the first casino in Las Vegas, but Bugsy Siegel, you know, it's the one that got it started. He was standing where the Dunes was, but now it's the Bellagio, and across the street is Caesar's Palace. Just seeing that old video, it just reeks of just, you know, mobbed up Las Vegas and hard-hitting reporters. It's a classic, Aaron. I'm with you, man. It's just a classic, classic piece.
I mean, I'm just. It's amazing working with Gary, doing the podcast, Gangland Wire, getting the chance to talk to people like yourself, Larry Henry, and I got to go out and subscribe to your Facebook page, which we didn't mention earlier. If you listen to this as the first episode, you've got to go back And listen to the one we did before here with Larry Henry, and then go to his Facebook page, which is Las Vegas Mafia History, and like that, share and subscribe to that. Also, you want to go and check out some of his work on newsbreakers.com. Search on Mafia Chronicles. It's once again another great interview from the mouth of the men that were there and did it, much like Ned Day, yourself, one of those people.
Yeah, this has been great, Larry. You got any, I guess, give you a chance for a last word, Larry, about any of this, anything in particular?
Well, the last word I'm going to put in is to plug what you guys are doing. I first of all, thank you for having me on. It's been a blast, and our friendship, Gary, over the last couple of years has meant a lot to me. But in all seriousness, what you've done with Gangland Wire, your book, Leaving Vegas, I still think the transcripts you have are some of the most valuable mob. You know, we're talking, Aaron and I were talking a second ago about the footage that they had in the mob on the run, which I think was 1987. Your transcripts that you have on your site and the Kindle edition and so forth of Savella, Thomas, Augusto. I mean, man, that stuff is just gold. And so my final word is, people like you and folks keeping this stuff alive opens up new avenues in all the mob reporting, and I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Larry. I've appreciated your friendship over the years. You were I remember the first time you I noticed that you liked one of my things, and so I didn't have many people liking stuff, and so I thought, well, who is this guy? And I look, well, he's a newsman right down here just south of me a little bit, and newsman and a former Marine, right? Am I right on that?
Are you ever a former Marine, Gary?
No, you're never a former Marine. I know that. I've worked with enough of you Marines. You know, they all met. Here's a funny little Marine story for you. The Marines on the police department on Marine Corps birthday would all meet in what we called the show-up room, and they'd do a little thing. And we had a guy who was kind of a prankster, and there was a way to play some music. Well, in this case, it was music. There was a way to broadcast through a loudspeaker in that room. So he rigged it up. When those Marines were in there doing their little Marine Corps birthday party, he started playing Anchors Away.
Yeah. Well, Gary, I'm not going to end this show with a word that couldn't be used in a family setting. I'll
okay.
Just say this. In the Marine Corps, sailors are called squids, and I'm not going to get into any more detail. I'll just sort of leave it at that.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. Larry, it's been great having you on. Aaron's signaling he's got something here.
I got one more question for Larry Henry here. Folks, other than finding him on Facebook and on newsbreakers.com, is there something that folks can look forward to finding from you that maybe they don't know about right now, but when they listen to this, they're like, I've got to check this out.
Yeah. Those are the two main, those are the two main things I'm working on now. I've got some, other things I'm working on that I don't want to sort of get too far out ahead on and make promises that I can't deliver on yet, but I've got some projects that I hope will become, fruitful fairly soon. So thanks. I really appreciate you guys, plugging those things. But again, guys, I can't thank you enough for having me on. And man, keep up the good work. I listen to you guys' podcast all the time. And Gary, I still see Aaron playing that leading role in that movie.
All right. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
So if you have a friend or relative who has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I got to say, folks, you need to go out to facebook.com/...
Gangland Wire.
Gangland Wire, and share and subscribe to that, as well, of course, as Las Vegas Mob History with our great guest, Larry Henry. Check that out. But as he so aptly described, Gary's book, Leaving Vegas, you can get the written version, and you can read what these men said, the actual criminals, or you can get the book and the Kindle, which gives you the opportunity to listen to the words from the mouth of the men that did it. And when you listen to that, you're going to want to go out and watch Ned Day's documentary, Mob on the Run, and you're going to want to watch Gary Jenkins' documentary that started all of this podcast, Gangland Wire. And it's great Kansas City history, great Las Vegas history, great mob history, some of the original source material that you cannot find anywhere else. And once you've done all that, now you're totally motivated to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app, because if you're in Kansas City or the area, you want to take your own personalized tour of notorious mob locations in and around Kansas City. And that's how you do it. Turn by turn directions.
All right. Say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Bumper music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Facebook at Odd-O-Matic Music.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. All right. Well, we're done. We're out now. I'm still recording this. Sometimes I'll throw some of this on the very end of the thing, just for people who listen all the way through to the end.
But yeah, that
was so much fun, guys.
The secret word.
I really appreciate it.
Gangland Wire's secret word of the episode is Ned Day.
Ned Day. Yeah. If you listen to some of this outtake stuff, and message me on my Facebook or Twitter feed at Jinx Law, and say Ned Day, and we'll know that you listened to the last
to the very bit. To the bitter end.
You know, this has been great, Larry, and I'll get back down there sometime this probably next spring, more than likely. If you want me to talk to your class again, I'll be happy to do
that. I definitely want you back. And I may get up to Kansas City soon and take you guys out for a lasagna dinner somewhere.
Right. Man, we got the place to go, too.
We do. We got the original mob place, Anthony's. We go in there, and we're liable to see a mob guy, too.
No, we will or will.
Well, hey, it's a date, guys. I'm going to get up there soon. Let's do it.
All right, we'll do it.
And maybe Gary will take you on a personalized tour.
We'll do a little tour if you got time.
One of the things we don't say in the app.
Oh, you know I do.
That's sad.
You know I do.
Sad fact about the app is we had somebody go up and knock on a door, and as a result of that, you know, there's family that still live there. Gary kind of sanitized the app a little bit, taking out some specific addresses. And I'm more of like, you know, the more accurate and detailed it is, you know, the more historically, you know, accurate, I think the better it makes the app. But
I had to take out the Savella's home address because some of them still live there, and this guy goes up there and gets out and is walking around the house taking pictures and gets confronted.
Are you serious?
I'm like, oh my God. So I took.
Well, he has to tell Gary this too. He's proud of it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I love your app, Gary.
He's enthusiastic.
I think somebody, and one of the things I've been thinking about doing, nobody's really done one like that for for Las Vegas. I think your app is fantastic. I love that app.
I've thought about it.
Yeah,
it's
I've told him he should do it. He should just add it onto the mob, the one for that he's got.
I don't think I can, though. I can't. There's no way to bifurcate it, shall we say. That's a $25 lawyer word, but there's no way to separate it out into Las Vegas or Kansas City. I wish there was. Here's the deal on make. I can make one of those apps pretty easily, but it cost me $200 a year to keep it up. I see. I'm not a coder.
Mm-hmm.
There's a company called ApiPi, and you can, you know, you don't have to be a coder to do all this.
Yeah, it's proprietary to Appy. They really kind of own the app.
No, I own the app.
Well, but you,
I own the app.
You can't like port it away from them.
I can't. There may be a way to do it, but I don't know how. I'm not that. I don't know, because I have thought about it. There's not one for Las Vegas. I know there's one for Chicago, and there's one for Manhattan.
I saw those. I'm shocked nobody's done Las Vegas.
Yeah, I am too.
To be honest with you.
I can't. I'm a little bit surprised too.
That's why I say just put it into your existing app. I know it's not Kansas City, but what you do is kind of tie Kansas City to Chicago, tie Kansas City to Vegas, because there are connections there that make it.
Yeah.
I mean, you've already got the platform up and some of them out. And, you know, when people get updates, they also get updates that we've done release podcast episodes this.
You can listen to the podcast on it. It connects to the podcast, too, which is kind of nice. You know, I guess what I might do is take some of the Kansas City stuff out and then put some Las Vegas stuff in, and I need to advertise. I'd have to advertise it and get some kind of a play in Las Vegas, because just because you do one of these things, you got to let people know it's out there. I got a little bit of a platform.
Well, with leaving Vegas, you got the natural connection through your book. I mean, you are the guy.
Yeah.
One of the things that drew me to you in the beginning, Gary, is you are the guy who, I mean, that whole Kansas City, Las Vegas connection is your your wheelhouse, man.
That's true.
That's your wheelhouse.
Well, there's nobody else really. Bill Owsley isn't coming forward doing more material about this. I mean, as far as there's other officers that we've spoken with, none of them have books or apps or podcasts or documentaries largely.
I think I may be the only guy in the United States that has a podcast, a book, a movie.
An app.
It's excellent, man.
A speaker's presentation.
Well, and those transcripts, I mean, those audios, man. Yeah,
and
that's
the audios.
What first took me. Those things are killer. They're just great.
They are, aren't they? You know, part of the problem with those are they're great for the real hardcore mob enthusiast and historian and somebody that really wants to know really how it worked. But for just the kind of normal day-to-day fan that's looking for the more exciting stuff, they're a little bit dry. But it really, what drew me to it, Larry, was it's the real deal. It's how this works. It's like listening to Nick Civella talk about, rather than talking about killing people, he's talking about, you know, how you smooth people over. And then they're talking about one time it was hard to get this in, and it was a real poor sound quality recording, but they were talking about bribing a gaming control guy out in the casino, the one that comes in and around the casino, and bribing one of them, and they had this plan, I think Carl Thomas and Joe Augusto, and Nick says, well, wait a minute, he says, how do you know that he won't turn on you? You know, those guys will turn on you in a second, and you know, it's that kind of thing.
It's great, man.
That is a real deal thing, you know. That is, they don't just go out and bribe everybody and kill everybody. He was a guy that, you know, that other little saying he said about Lefty and the newspaper people, it's like Lefty's wounded, and he said, you know, the coyotes are going after him, and they're going to pick at him and pick at him. You know, he's a done deal. That's how he looked at the news media and Lefty Rosenthal. So, you know, it's a different sort of a deal than like a lot of people like to think about the mob.
And it's really their voices, and that's what, like this. The one thing I love about your mob and the media series is, you know, the folks who are in the middle of it. You stared eyeball to eyeball with Tuffy DeLuna. George Knapp, my friend Jeff Gehrman, Jane Morrison, they stared eyeball to eyeball with Lefty and Spilotro. So that those people who knew those people, dealt with them, are now still working, but these younger reporters and cops, and they have never seen Tuffy DeLuna or Lefty Rosenthal or Tony Spilotro. You know what I mean, Gary? I mean, that credibility, you can't pay for that, man. I mean,
that's true.
That's why I love a lot of these Las Vegas reporters who are still out there and still working, because they went eyeball to eyeball with Spilotro. George Knapp still talks about that death stare from Spilotro that he'd give you. Now, how many people have gotten a Spilotro death stare that are still around?
Really?
You know,
yeah.
So
you know what? If you'll help me with these
one
people,
too many.
Yeah, really. If you'll help me with one of these guys, I wouldn't mind getting another one from Vegas and tell her kind of personal day to day experiences. That would be great. So if you'll help with that,
let me reach out and work with him, man.
I've got George Anastasia and his partner that does that mob talk where they walk and talk about Philly mob stuff.
I love that little mob talk thing.
Yeah, I've talked to Anastasia. I emailed with Anastasia one other time, and he wants to come on. And so I talked to his partner, so they're going to do it. I got Anthony DiStefano already a little bit from him, and I'm going to talk to John Drummond next week. And so I'm going to put together, you know, like a month or almost 6-week-long series of just the mob and the media and the mob.
Oh, that's going to be great. That guy, John Drummond, Bulldog Drummond,
yeah,
man,
oh, yeah.
He was that.
He's a character.
And people love that Chicago stuff.
Oh,
man.
I know.
Really do.
Yes,
you know?
I know. All right, I'll let you get on with what you're going to do, and I need to go do something myself. So thanks a lot, Larry.
Thank you.
All right, gentlemen. Talk to you soon, gentlemen.
Take care. Have a good weekend.
Bye. You too. Bye.